Dude, I am liking this theme music. This is fun. LL Cool J, I'm bad. Dude, and you know who's bad is my special guest today, my regular guest, Michael Brazemley. Michael, say hello.
Hi, everyone.
All right, let me turn this down a little bit. There we go. All right. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we are going to talk about the number one reason nationwide carriers get fired, and that is sick leave. So Michael's here because he has defended lots of carriers. He knows what kind of arguments to make with management and ways that you as a carrier can protect yourselves in the event that you're using sick leave. So take it away, Michael.
Well, number one reason to get fired is not sick leave.
Okay, unscheduled absence.
But unscheduled absence is something that management tries to do the most.
Yeah, let's right now parse the difference between those two. Being sick and missing work in and of itself is not necessarily unscheduled absence.
Right.
And it's not necessarily something that'll get you disciplined. Go ahead.
So here's a lot of problems what the carriers do. It's an unscheduled absence. The reason it's called unscheduled absence because they're not putting in a 3971 with management saying, hey, I got a surgery that's happening or whatever it is, and you just call in and take the time off. And so a lot of times that's where you get the unscheduled absence. But if you fill out a 3971 and say, hey, I'm going to have a surgery and I'm going to be out for the next 2-3 months, and you also get FMLA, there's nothing they can do because that is actually called a scheduled absence. And that's this usually what they cannot get you for.
That's exactly right. So the scheduling is key. Letting management know in advance, hey, I'm not going to be in on this day. And what about the argument, Michael, that if I call in for 3 days, only the first day is unscheduled?
No. If you call 3 separate
days. No, I'm saying so today is Monday. Mm-hmm. I call in for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the begin date of your leave?
Monday. Well, that'll be Monday.
What's the end date of your leave? Wednesday.
Right.
So only Monday is unscheduled.
Technically, that's only one incident.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. One unscheduled absence. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So that's another way, you know, that's the difference, right? This is the distinction between scheduled and unscheduled.
And management will try to get you saying, did you provide documentation? So if it's less than 3 days, what's the only documentation you need to give to management?
Your 3971.
Exactly.
Yep. That's it. Not even a statement. They don't need anything. The only time you'd have to provide documentation for an absence of less than three days is when you are on what?
If you have restricted sick leave.
Right.
And so that's where a lot of the problems happening is that management will use a program called Deems Desirable Program. Mm-hmm. And they're putting people on basically restricted sick leave whenever they feel like it. That program is nowhere in any of the contracts. There is not in the ELM. There is not in the M41 or M39 or any other handbooks on deemed desirable. The only thing reference to it is in the ELM saying that when management deemed it desirable, that they can force you to bring in documentation.
Right.
Because you are abusing the sick leave program, then they're able to put you on a restricted sick leave.
Right, exactly. That deems desirable is for restricted sick leave. Mm-hmm. Essentially, parsing out deems desirable is management's way of making an end run around the restricted sick leave process. And Michael had a successful, was it arbitration case?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, that he talked about on Classes of Mail. And then we got a really cool email from somebody who used it in their region.
Yeah, so they asked for help. Asked for help. And I sent the arbitration settlement to this a steward. Uh-huh. And the steward asked for help. And I, of course, I talked.
Of course.
Said, hey, I'll send it to you, no problem. And I sent it to him. And this is the response I got.
Oh, you have it ready. Oh, dude, go for it.
Say, hey, Alan and Michael. I just wanted to share the settlement we got with your help sending me that arbitration award. The footnotes are basically this. So I'm just going through the footnotes, okay? He won this case, okay? Number one, carrier gets mileage or copay and applicable taxes and an extra 1 hour pay, a straight time pay rate if they are improperly deemed.
So this would be like if they're made to go get documentation. Then they're going to get paid for
the
time
miles
and paid
the
for the mileage. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And number two, management must use a 513.39 restricted sick leave provisions as guided guidelines before deeming someone. Okay, that means when they wanted to use the deemed desirable program, they have to use the guidelines from the restricted sick leave. Okay, which the restricted sick leave guideline has like I think 5 or 6 things. I think I mentioned it on the other podcast about the deemed desirable. And one of the main things is they have to do a quarterly review. So they have to follow all those things, okay? Number 3, management must inform the carrier in advance and in writing with the reasons they are placed on deems, okay? That's actually in the restricted sick leave,
right,
saying
it's the
that
same
whenever
as restricted
they
sick leave.
Issue yeah. a restricted sick leave, they have to notify the carrier in writing with the reasons.
Right. Okay? So now I want this episode to be aimed more at carriers rather than at stewards. Mm-hmm. And if you are a carrier and management is telling you that you have to provide documentation, this is your red flag. And this is, you know, hey, why do I have to provide documentation? Am I on restricted sick leave? Hell, you don't even have to ask because you would know if you're on restricted sick leave because they have to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then number 4, management can't use deems as a substitute for restricted sick leave or for more than 3 days in a row. And number 5, management must email branch president every time someone is placed on deems, including the reasons why. And then number 6, for fail to comply with the memorandum 1517, which is
that you have to comply with,
you have to comply with the
settlements. Yep.
Okay. And via previous resolution, so $60 to the branch, which I believe it should be. They should ask for higher, at least 100, but anyway, yeah. Whatever. And or give it to the person that was grievant.
Yeah.
Give it to the person that's grievant instead of
yeah,
the branch.
There you go.
Okay.
Right.
That's what I said. But anyway, says he included the settlement and showed it to me and basically thanking us for giving him the arbitration settlement so that he can use it on his own branch.
It's awesome doing the good work. So as a carrier, again, you don't have to provide documentation. If it's 1 day or 2 days, no documentation is needed. And even when it's 3 days or more, management has the option of accepting your statement as documentation. It doesn't necessarily have to be from a healthcare provider because not all illnesses require that level of treatment. Even if you have the flu, you can, you know, rest and drink your fluids and have grandma's chicken soup and get better without having to go to the doctor. So, yeah, you don't always have to provide that documentation. But when you do provide documentation or when you get asked about your illnesses in an investigative interview, it is important to know what words you need to use. And so for that, I want to read from the ELM about sick leave. All right. So 513, sick leave. Sick leave ensures, this is 513.11. Sick leave ensures employees against loss of pay if they are incapacitated and cannot perform their duties because of illness, injury, pregnancy, and confinement, or medical, including dental or optical, examination or treatment. So the big word in there is incapacitated.
Yeah, which is funny because I got a letter warning the other day for attendance.
Uh-huh.
And during the investigative interview, they asked me the reasons why I was not able to come to work.
Right.
My reason was that I was incapacitated go to work.
Right.
Okay. And in the letter of warning, you know what it said?
Tell me.
Due to your reasons for unscheduled absence, we had no choice but to issue you this.
When
discipline.
The reason is right out of the ELM for why you need sick leave.
Right.
Dude. Yeah. And it also says, go ahead.
And sadly, our current branch president and their regime will agree to price 6 months of letter warning on this.
Dude, that's wild. Okay. When it should be complete withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, completely removed.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, okay. So in the ELM, it tells management when they can authorize sick leave. So it's 513.32, conditions for authorization. Illness or injury. If the employee is incapacitated and cannot perform official duties. So to me, that's pretty broad in the sense that there's a lot of things I have to do while I'm at work. And so I could go to the grocery store and pick up some stuff. And that doesn't mean I should have gone to work. Because going to the grocery store, pushing a cart around for 20 minutes, hell of a lot easier than walking 10 miles on a park and loop. You know, I could be well enough to go to the grocery store, but not well enough to go to work.
Well, go ahead. I don't have parking loop. Mine is just CBUs.
Yeah, so maybe you don't have that excuse. Okay.
No, but the only thing is I have to make sure I can drive my vehicle. So if you're not able to safely drive your vehicle, then that is incapacitated to work.
Right, that is incapacitated. And yeah, it's worthwhile to say like in what way you were incapacitated, because remember, that investigative interview is your day in court. And so you want to provide, imagine if you were telling a jury the reason why you couldn't come into work. Whatever you would tell that jury, that's what you should be telling management, because this is what's going to be used to exonerate you. So if you had diarrhea and you couldn't go more than 15 minutes without running to the toilet, that's a good reason why you were incapacitated to come to work.
But you do not have to provide that information to management.
No, you don't.
Management does not need to know that, because
right.
The reason for it is that that's the HIPAA law, because what if the manager decides to say, hey, this guy had a stomach problem. He was shitting all over himself and tells that to everybody.
Right. Yeah, okay? Right. That is absolutely your private information. So when I go in for an investigative interview, I will tell my carrier, look, you don't have to give any medical information. You can just say you were incapacitated. You don't have to share it. But if you think it strengthens your case, if it shows how you were incapacitated, or if I'm looking, this is further down in 513.32, contagious disease. This is another reason why they could approve your sick leave. A contagious disease is a disease ruled as requiring isolation, quarantine, or restriction of movement of the patient for a particular period by the health authorities having jurisdiction. So, and these sick leave rules, they apply to you, or they also apply to dependent care. So if your kids got the flu, then I would advise my carrier, dude, you should say specifically, flu, because flu is a contagious disease.
I just wanted to quickly go over some of the bad settlements that our branch did.
Okay. Is
that I had a carrier who had an investigative interview, and his reason was that I almost died. I was at the hospital dying in bed.
That's a good reason not to come to work. That's incapacitated.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that was during the investigative interview. And management, what did they do?
They said, okay, we get it, man. I hope you feel better.
No.
No?
Gave him a letter warning for that. They gave him a letter warning for
of course they did.
Going on a death, almost dying. Okay?
Yeah.
And guess what our union did? Because, you know, of course, for me, there's no way I want withdrawal. This to stay. I need this to be thrown out because this guy almost died.
Right.
Okay? It's in the contention this guy almost died.
Right. That's a good reason not to come to work.
It goes to our branch.
Uh-huh. To formal A.
Yeah.
Or,
and they saw that this guy is actually a scab.
Dude.
And so they agreed to 6 months of letter warning on that. That is the biggest failure that I could ever see from our branch.
Well, we don't know that that's why they didn't represent him well. But
I know that he was a scab. And I believe
it's not okay.
They didn't read the whole thing because they saw that it was a scab and didn't read my whole contentions. Dude.
Right. We're obligated to represent everybody.
Everybody.
Anybody at my station gets my full representation, because I'm defending the contract and I'm defending everybody.
We're defending every letter carrier.
That's right. That's exactly right. And if you let one carrier get walked over, now management can walk over letter carriers.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly the thing, is because they're a scab who's not part of the union because they dropped out of the union, and you let that go because, you know, because they're not part of the union. So they say, oh, and then management's going to come back later and say, well, you did this for the other guy, so I can do the same thing on this thing.
Right. And then it's disparate treatment.
Exactly.
And, it's a mess.
Exactly. That's why you got to treat it the same way every time. But unfortunately, our branch gave this guy 6 months.
Dude.
And then what the funny thing is?
Tell me.
He calls maybe once or twice a year for sick leave.
Right. That's right. It. Yeah. He doesn't abuse his sick leave. Yeah. Obviously. Okay, so documentation, 513.36, for employee absences of 3 consecutive days or less. All right, so it's not 1 or 2, it's 1, 2, or 3 days. Supervisors may accept the employee's statement explaining the absence. Medical documentation or other acceptable evidence of incapacity for work or need care for a family member is required only... Shit, I lost it. Is required only when the employee is on restricted sick leave, or when the supervisor deems documentation desirable for the protection of postal interests. So again, that's what Michael talked about earlier with that deems desirable. You only need medical documentation when you are on restricted sick leave, if it's 3 days or less.
No, Yeah, if you're on restricted sick leave.
Right. You only need documentation if you're on restricted sick leave, if it's 3 days or less.
And then on the restricted sick leave, when they give you a restriction, they have to review, which is pretty much the next quarter, of how well your attendance was.
Okay? Oh, right. Because the idea behind restricted sick leave is they put you on notice and then you improve.
Right.
Yeah.
And then once you prove, they're supposed to take it off.
There you go.
Yeah. Not whenever they feel like it.
Right. Exactly.
There is a process.
Okay, so absences over 3 days. For absences that exceed 3 consecutive days, employees are required to submit medical documentation or other acceptable evidence of incapacity to work or for work or need to care for a family member, and if requested, substantiation of the family relationship. There you go. So yeah, if it's more than 3 days, if it's 4 or more days, then you will need documentation. But again, doesn't necessarily mean you have to go to a doctor. Other acceptable evidence is okay.
All right. So when I said that it's extremely rare for anybody to get fired for attendance,
yeah,
I meant that because I have not seen a single person get fired for attendance yet.
Nobody under my watch.
Exactly.
But it is, like, when I talked to Mike Carriff a while back, he said that's the number one reason carriers are getting fired.
Well,
it speaks to how rarely carriers get fired, honestly. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So another thing that I wanted to go over about discipline stuff is the Article 16.7.
Okay.
I know it's a little bit off the unscheduled, but that is what's going on in discipline right now. Doing a lot of 16.7, doing safety checks.
Okay. We can digress on that. Sure.
And so my station, we've had 6 carriers at my station that they were 16.7 because they didn't wear a seatbelt or they left the vehicle engine running.
Dude, not okay. I mean, we're going to talk about why management's action is inappropriate, but dude, wear your seatbelt.
Yeah. No, please take the key out of the ignition.
Yeah, they're at 2. Right. Curb your wheel, set the brake, put it in park, take out the key.
Okay. What people don't understand is we get paid to keep the vehicle safe from doing other things like runaways and so forth. Okay. Because the day that you learn your lesson because you left the vehicle running and ran over somebody and somebody died is not the lesson that you want.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So please watch what you're doing. We get paid to do all the safety. That's including the curbing the wheel, including wearing the seatbelt, including taking the keys out of the vehicle. Okay.
Right.
That's the main thing. Don't leave the vehicle running. Okay. Now here's what I do. I don't know if anybody else wants to do it.
Okay.
Is that I attach the vehicle key to my arrow key using those hook things.
Yeah. Yeah. A carabiner.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I always had to take the vehicle key out.
Right. Of you
the
physically can't leave it in there.
Right.
If you get out of the vehicle.
Right.
Yeah. I do the same. I have a retractor for my vehicle key and yep, that's it. Take the key out, retract it, you know, and incidentally, I recently switched from an LOV to a ProMaster, and there were days where my entire route would fit in the cab of an LLV, parcels and everything. And so, man, being in the ProMaster, it is luxurious. I got so much space in there. But what I didn't have was the good habits that I had built up over the years in the LLV. And I went probably the first week, I probably only set my brake a quarter of the time that I would park that vehicle. And I finally developed the habit where when my right hand goes to put the ProMaster in park, my left hand reaches down for the brake. And now it's a habit and I do it every time. And that's what you have to do. You have to build those positive habits. And dude, it's kind of messing me up that the ProMaster is left-hand drive because my Camry is left-hand drive. And when I get it, and the gear selector is in a very similar position. And so now when I go to put my Camry in park, my left hand automatically goes down to pull that brake up. And it's not there in the Camry.
Now, all these 16.7s,
yep.
please get your steward. Okay. If they say that, didn't wear your seatbelt. And if you see that there's only one person at middle of the night at 8:30 at night and saying that you were not wearing a seatbelt and they don't really actually have proof. All they want is your admission that you did something wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I know that you did something wrong and you don't want to lie.
But you don't have you to answer deny. Their questions.
But you can deny.
Well, and not you answer. Can refuse to answer, right, mm-hmm. until I'm not going to answer these questions until my steward
until
is
my
present.
Steward is that present. Is
exactly right.
Okay?
Yep.
And then even then, that is your day in court.
Right.
Okay? Because that is your day in court. You don't say, oh, I am guilty.
Right. Yeah.
What does a lawyer tell you?
Right. Don't incriminate yourself. Yeah. And the Fifth Amendment protects you from self-incrimination. Uh-huh. I wonder if that extends to the investigative interview.
It should. I said, I would like to remain silent.
Right. Yeah.
I'd like to remain silent.
They can take from that what they will, mm-hmm. but it's better. It puts the burden where it belongs. It puts it on management.
Burden on management to prove.
Right.
That what you did. So if it was only one person looking at it at 8:30 at night, how can they prove that?
Let's use that burden of proof to get us back into sick leave.
Mm-hmm.
Because management has to prove that you're abusing your sick leave. Mm-hmm. That's the allegation when they charge you with failure to maintain a signed schedule.
And that is the attendance. Elm actually says, if the management has to prove that they're abusing sick leave, it actually says that.
Right.
Under restricted sick leave guidelines.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I'm thinking about? Because I just pulled up the computer looking for something, but it's actually in the M39 what I'm looking for, is the steps that management is supposed to take. Maybe you know them off the top of your head, where they always like to cite whatever the provision is in the ELM about you have to keep your regular schedule. But then like the next two provisions after that are instructions to management on how they're supposed to like coach you up if you are, you know, if you aren't maintaining your regular schedule, that they're supposed to talk to you about it, see if you need help, see, you know, and management doesn't do that.
Right.
And then there's another provision, and I should have prepped for this in advance, but it essentially says that if management thinks that you're abusing your sick leave, that they should do an attendance review with you if they think that there is a problem.
That's in the Elm.
Yeah, that's in the Elm. And so if they don't do that attendance review, that's essentially their admission that they don't think there's a problem. And so how can they discipline you when they didn't even do what they would do if they thought it was a problem?
Just to give you a little info about attendance review.
Yep.
Management lies that they did an attendance review. All they do is they go into your indication report?
The key indicator report.
Yeah. Key indicator report. And they'll say, oh, we had an attendance review on this day. Okay? And this day. Okay? And then you know that when they're lying is when they have an attendance review like 15, 6 to 20 of them all in like within 6 months. Okay? That means they're not doing the attendance review correctly because they're supposed to do it quarterly, right?
Right.
So why are they doing like 15, 16? Oh, that's because they're trying to come after you for every little thing.
Right. They're planning, they're building their case to discipline you. Okay, mm-hmm. So it was in the ELM all the time. I was, here it is. It's 511.42. Management responsibilities. To control unscheduled absences, postal officials, A, inform employees of leave regulations. And so you should know what constitutes irregular in attendance or regular in attendance because they've got to discuss it with you. B, discuss attendance records with individual employees when warranted. So if they're not discussing it with you, it's because it's not warranted. And so they should not be issuing discipline when even a discussion wasn't warranted. And a discussion, what article is discussion?
A discussion is an article
16.2, right?
Yeah.
16.2. That's the lowest step on discipline.
And what is discussion?
Discussion
is
just a talk.
It's just a talk, and management cannot use that to issue discipline.
That is exactly right. And so that's what it says to do in their own manual, is that they should have a discussion with you when warranted.
Right. Also in the M39 section 115.3,
okay.
I think it is about management. It has to pursue all the five whys before they issue any type of discipline.
Yeah.
That is why, where, when.
Who, what, when, where, why, and how, from the journalism, whatever.
The same five whys.
Yeah.
Okay.
It couldn't possibly be called the five whys because they'll start with the five W's maybe. Who, what, when,
five
where, why.
I'm sorry, not five whys, five W's.
Yeah. Either way.
Yeah, whatever.
Management
the five
has an obligation.
Yeah.
That's the takeaway here. All right. So getting back to.
But they were supposed to find out when and where and how and what happened before they issue any type of discipline.
Exactly.
Which, how many managers do you know that actually do all of
that? Very few, which is why so much discipline gets overturned
right.
and thrown out and reduced and all that mm-hmm. stuff.
And that's where as stewards, we put in the contention they didn't do their
wise. Getting back to the rank and file carrier, some of the things that you can do to protect yourself. One is get FMLA coverage. If you have a condition that's going to be ongoing, if your family member has one that's going to be ongoing, you know, there's a whole list of criteria for which you can get FMLA coverage.
Now, I've had excuses from carriers who says they cannot get FMLA, but I'm going, but you told me all these excuses that sounds legit.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why you can't get that. Well, my doctor won't sign it. Then you need to go get another doctor.
Yeah. Well, in my experience, now granted, I've got it easy because my wife has chronic illness. She's legally disabled. And so FMLA, it's cakewalk, you know, when you have a situation like that. But if you don't have an FMLA condition that, you know, is causing you to miss all this work, I'm going to tell you the hard truth that maybe look in the mirror. You know, maybe you should start coming to work if you don't have good reasons. But if you have good reasons, then you should qualify for FMLA.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I believe this carrier had the good reasons.
Yeah.
Because this person has 6 kids. Okay.
Yeah. And that's a great reason. Yeah. They get sick issues all the time. Yeah. With infectious diseases.
So if you have a doctor that watches all those kids,
right,
they should have no problem signing the FMLA.
Dude, and whatever your doctor charges, that $50 or whatever it is, mm-hmm. it is worth every penny mm-hmm. to not have management ride your ass. It's your get out of jail free card.
Yeah, some doctors charge, some doctors don't.
Yeah, yeah, it varies. But even if they do charge $50, it's worth it. Yeah, to get that. All right, so that's one of the ways to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Another way, we talked about the difference between scheduled and unscheduled absences. Guys, I have sat in on investigative interviews where the carrier says, oh, I had to take my dad to a doctor appointment at the VA. And, dude, you just said the word appointment. So you knew that this was coming. So this should not be an unscheduled absence. You should fill out your 3971 in advance. And then over on the right side of the form, there's a little checkbox that says approved in advance. And you check the box that says yes.
And then if you bring a copy of the 397 to the II or whatever,
right,
this was a scheduled absence.
Right. And it says approved in advance.
There's nothing they can do.
There is not a thing they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's another way that you protect yourself. Because if you know that's coming up, put that leave in advance. And management can't unreasonably deny your scheduled sick leave because appointments are one of the things that are specifically outlined in the ELM. And if they deny your leave, they have to put the reason for denial. And there are very few reasons that would be valid to deny sick leave. Yep.
Just want to go over, you know, I know that there are a lot of good stewards and excellent stewards and super stewards to super formal A's and super branch leaders and so forth, okay? And the whole thing is even though they are so good at what they do, but you still have to protect yourself and cover your ass, do the SIA.
Right, exactly.
Cover your ass.
Yeah, don't rely on your steward to get you out of this trouble. Be proactive, know your rights, know what management's looking for, and do what it takes to protect yourself.
Yeah, because if you just rely on the person to protect yourself at all times, you might get a wake-up call one day and lose your job.
Yeah.
So let's not do that. Just cover your ass.
Right.
Make sure that you have paper trail in everything that you do. If you go to the hospital, make sure you get a doctor's note. If you go to some appointment, make sure you get an appointment note from the doctor. Whatever you got to do, always do the cover your ass thing, and then you'll be fine. Okay. I've seen too many carriers now that says, oh, I want to see a doctor. Okay, did you get a doctor's note? No. Well, okay, I understand there's you don't have to provide it because it's 3 days or less, but since management always like to go after carriers for everything, so just to cover your ass, you have a doctor's note, and then you provide that with the witness statement for your steward. Your steward will make it easier for that steward to cover your ass and get a better settlement for you. So please watch what you're doing, cover your ass, and
it's great advice.
Then you'll get out of most of anything.
All right, yeah. Are you ready for some outro music?
Well,
I'm so excited to do my new toys. All right, we're gonna pot this up. Oh, that's the wrong dial. Hold on, there we go. I'm a soldier at war, making sure you don't try to battle me no more. Got concrete rhymes, been rapping for 10 years, and even when I'm bragging, I'm being sincere. Yeah, Dude, that is awesome. So I'm sure that there are copyright issues that I'm violating or something like that, but it's a one-off, and I do have theme music coming, so I cannot wait for that to happen. And in the meantime, guys, thank you for listening. Thank you very much, Michael, for coming in and joining us today. And LL Cool J, did you know that ladies love Cool J? So he will take you out. First you better learn how to rhyme. I'm the pinnacle. That means I reign supreme. And I'm notorious. I'll crush you like a jelly bean.